Hi, everybody. My name is Martin Grant. I'm the Dean of the Faculty of Science at McGill. Welcome to the 8th Annual Faculty of Science Undergraduate Research Conference. Welcome to all our students, the supervisors, and the student, and the professors who are involved in the work. Some that you'll have seen outside in the poster presentations from every department within the Faculty of Science and associated biomedical faculties. As well, much of this work you will see, if you wish, in the MSURG McGill Science Undergraduate Research Journal. I take a lot of pride in the fact that our faculty takes as a branding that our professors are routinely working with undergraduates in the same way 100 years ago Ernest Rutherford worked with Harriet Brooks, an undergraduate student in the physics department in the beginning years of nuclear physics. Okay, you look around outside, there's stuff on climate change, on ant behavior, on Atlantic Canada's environmental NGOs, a street camera for ultra-fast electron diffraction. This just gives a sense of the excitement there is on campus for the involvement with research and the excitement of the professors who are working on it. We're fortunate to have NSERC's president here today, Suzanne Fortier. Suzanne will be up soon to speak. And she shares what you guys will have soon, McGill BSc, and she's also a McGill PhD. She'll be introduced, I don't quite understand this, but anyway, I'm gonna stay here or something, and then Peter's gonna come up and talk for a while, and then I'll have a formal introduction of Suzanne. I never know, I keep on announcing this, and I'm not allowed to announce it, so we're very pleased as well that we've received an incredible gift recently from the Lauren Trache and his family. A portion of that gift was announced about a year ago, about $5 million, and another $5 million gift, if I remember correctly, has just been agreed to, and that includes a very generous gift of $1.25 million to facilitate undergraduate research in the Faculty of Science. I'm very proud to be associated with that. I'm not supposed to say a word about that till November 5th, so I'm saying it everywhere I go. Well, our faculty, in fact, all of McGill, has been infused with a large number of new, talented young professors over the last 10 years. And my faculty, it's like 70% of the professors were not here something like 10 years ago. And as I said, I take a great deal of pride in the fact these professors are making part of their research groups, not only grad students and postdocs, but undergraduates have a meaningful involvement with their work. By doing this, we create knowledge to better the world. It's corny, but it's true. With that, I would like to call upon our Associate Dean, Research and Graduate Education, Peter Gruter, to say a few words. Come on, Peter.
Martin, stay on stage and move to your left of the podium.
No, it's okay. Okay, so my name is Peter Gruter. I'm Associate Dean of Research and Graduate Education in the Faculty of Science. Welcome, everyone. And before I forget, I would really like to thank Victor Chisholm and his crew from the Office of Undergrad Research in the Faculty of Science, which is the first office in Canada and the world, actually, that is specifically for undergrad research. It's existed for 8 years, for organizing this event, which is about showcasing the great research all of you have done this summer. So, with that, I guess I'll have to go back to this wasn't in my notes because Victor does a great job. So first of all, it is my great pleasure to announce the winners of the Undergrad Research Conference and maybe some technicalities, so here's how it's going to work. You will receive a diploma, a trophy, and a membership in the Sigma Xi Scientific Research Society, the winners. And then later, we will send you a cash prize to the winners. There are six categories to kind of, you know, make sure that different fields are covered. The second prize in each category will be $150. The first prize will be $300. To the winners, when I call you up, please come on stage. I guess from here. Then Dr. Fortier and Dean Grant will distribute the conference's prize. Then you will be asked to shake hands, look at the cameras, smile, So we've had several in the past, 30 years, we've had several undergrad researchers here that went on to win Nobel Prizes. And so we want to have a good picture of you when you win the Nobel Prize in a few years. We have expectations you're the best, okay? So when you cross the stage and when hang out over the at the edge there without falling off the edge, because we will then want to have a picture of all the prize winners in the end, okay? And it's just in terms of making sure that we don't have too much motion around here. We'll have a group photo. And then as you leave the stage, representatives from Sigma Z will give you the information about induction and membership to that organization. And so without further ado, here are the prizes. And there's no speeches for the prizes, no 5 minutes. Okay? So, biological sciences. Second prize goes to Irene Yuning Ji. Let's come up, please. For a project on structural analysis of IFIT1 and IFIT3 under the supervision of Professor Bhushan Nagar. Congratulations. And remember to smile.
Thanks.
Good. And the first prize goes to Jordan Townsend for a project on the effects of lateralized prefrontal cortical serotonin depletion on stress-related behavior and neuroendocrine regulation under the supervision of Ron Sullivan from the Department of Physiology. Congratulations.
Okay.
Listen to the dean. Perfect. We're moving on to Earth System Science. The second prize goes to Katja Lammer, or Lammer. The project on the development of a methodology to study vertical cloud dynamics in the group of Pavlos Kolias, the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Congratulations. Okay, and the first prize goes to Caroline Aubrey Wake for projects on the influence of evaporation in glaciated basins water budget, a case study in the Cordillera Blanca in Peru. Congratulations. And the supervision of Michel Barrère and Jeffrey McKenzie. We move on to health and social sciences. Second prize goes to Joseph Leonard. For a project entitled Environmental Determinants of Infectious Disease Emergence under the supervision of Leah Baran-Ford. Congratulations. Okay, and the first prize goes to Erica Yoon for a project on infant use of cues for finding syllable boundaries. Congratulations. The supervision of Professor Heather Goad and Christine Onishi from the Department of Psychology. Congratulations. Perfect. We're moving on to mathematical and computational sciences. Second prize goes to William Hamilton for efficiently modeling sparse dynamical systems. Congratulations. This was for work performed under supervision of Professor Joël Pinot in the School of Computer Science. And the first prize goes to Colleen Alkalai Julian for false name binding in combinatorial options. Congratulations. This was done under the supervision of Professor Adrian Vetter in the Department of Mathematics and Statistics. We move on to medical sciences. Second prize goes to Isabelle Deloge for heterogeneity of outer membrane protease T activity in uropathogenic Escherichia coli clinical isolates. I think that's also the longest, nearly the longest title. Congratulations. This was done under supervision of Professor Samantha Grünheit and Hervé Lemoyle in the Department of Microbiology and Immunology. And the first prize goes to Edward Mason, pancreatic homing of FOXP3 plus regulatory T cells in marine model of type 1 diabetes. Under the supervision of Professor Ciriaco Piccirillo in the Department of Microbiology and Immunology. Sorry for the pronunciation of that name. Perfect. We move on to physical sciences. Second prize, Jan Altazar for a project on how stuffing leads to novel behavior in spin ice. Congratulations. Done in a group of Professor Michel Gingras. And he was nominated by the Department of Physics.
Félicitations.
Merci.
And the first prize, oh, sorry, picture and smile.
Yes.
Can you guys compress a bit or stuff a bit, please? Perfect. We have another two coming up. Okay, and the first prize goes to Daniel Salvatore for electrochemical measurements of the charge transfer through DNA modified with diphenyl phenanthroline correlated to copper 1. Congratulations. This was done under joint supervision of Professor Hanadi Sleeman and Professor Janine Moserol from the Department of Chemistry. Well done. Perfect, and so now I guess we'll take the group picture. I'll leave it to the photographer to arrange. The taller guys in the back, the... Smile. Perfect. Now remember, congratulations. Remember, if you go down the stairs on the other side, essentially Sigma Xi will give you an information about your prize. So if you would exit the stage on the left side, congratulations. And congratulations again. So I would like... Yeah, let's give them a round of applause. So I would now like to ask Dean Grant to introduce our speaker.
Thanks, Peter.
Okay, that was great. And it gives me pleasure to welcome Dr. Suzanne Forche as a keynote speaker for our 8th Undergraduate Science Undergraduate Research Conference. Suzanne has served as president of NSERC, the Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council of Canada, since January of 2006. And as one administrator to another, I know that increasing your budget by about a factor of two, is that right?
Not quite, I wish.
Still some work to do for Suzanne, but almost a factor of two is an incredible accomplishment in that role and good for the whole country. Suzanne is a crystallographer by training, specializing in the development of mathematical and artificial intelligence methodologies for protein structure determination. And like I told you guys at the beginning, as you will be soon, She is a McGill graduate. She completed her PhD here in 76 and her BSc in 1972. Her career has taken her through many different fields, from postdoc at the Medical Foundation of Buffalo, a research associate at NRC, research scientist at Medical Foundation of Buffalo, and she served at Queen's University as professor in both chemistry and computer science, and was the VP research from 95 to 2000, and then the VP academic from 2000 to 2005, before taking up her role at NSERC. In addition to her responsibilities at NSERC, Suzanne is currently a member of the Ontario Task Force on Competitiveness, Productivity, and Economic Progress, and the board of directors, as well as the board of directors of the Canada Foundation of Innovation. So, without further ado, we welcome back a McGill alumnus, Dr. Forche, to present her address entitled Exploring the Borderless World of Science and Innovation. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you. I have to tell you, I'm thrilled to be here. Je suis vraiment ravie d'être de retour à McGill, surtout entourée d'étudiants et étudiantes au premier cycle qui s'intéressent à la recherche. I feel very much at home here because, as you know, I've been through what you are going through as a student doing a BSc here at McGill. So, since we are en famille, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my experience at McGill, and then we'll get into more serious stuff here. My voyage at McGill was truly a voyage of discovery. That's the nice way to say that I was absolutely clueless about what I was getting myself into when I came to McGill. I came from a very small village in Quebec. I was the first one in my whole family to come to university, so we really did not have any good understanding of what it meant to go to university in my family. And then I didn't speak English. That was a little bit of a hurdle, and maybe it was a good thing in some ways, because my journey is quite unusual, would probably not be recommended to anyone else, but I think in the end it really was a great journey for me, and I will be always grateful to McGill for that. So I came to McGill. One of the reasons why I chose McGill is because I had looked at the calendar and figured out that this was a university that did not have any classroom teaching. And I thought, that sounds good. You know, I'm not going to spend any time in the classroom. You know, you've spent quite a bit of time in secondary school. And that's because looking at the calendar, I saw that they had laboratories and lectures. Lecture. And I didn't think that, you know, I thought lecture must mean the same thing in English and French. And so I discovered, of course, pretty soon upon arrival that the meaning is a little bit different in English. Also, I registered in a program, was a BSc in crystallography. Now, I didn't know that I was the only student in this program, that nobody had ever taken this program before, and I suppose I'll ask the dean to check on this, but I don't know if anybody did after me. I might be the only ever graduate of crystallography at McGill at the undergraduate level. And of course, if I had known all of this, I probably would have chosen something different. It would have scared me a little bit. And I'm sure people told me, but because I didn't understand English, I didn't get it. So I went along happily in my crystallography program. And it has allowed me, I think my experience at McGill has really allowed me, and I'll put some slides on here, to enter a world that I had no idea existed, and that is the borderless world of science and technology. Crystallography is an interdisciplinary program. I did some maths, physics, chemistry, geology, truly interdisciplinary. The word was not even used in those days, but it showed me that science is truly borderless and that there are contributions to many important problems coming from different disciplines. It was also borderless in the sense that this was a field with a fairly small community, but very tightly knit community worldwide. And I was exposed very early on as a student to the giants of my field, people I read about in textbook, people like Dorothy Hodgkin, Nobel Prize in Chemistry, who stood over my shoulder in the lab to ask me what I was doing here at McGill. This was quite extraordinary for me as a young student here. But it showed me that science is truly global at a very early stage of my training, and also fiercely competitive, and you've got to really work hard and have ambition to succeed, because I was surrounded by these very generous but competitive giants in my field. So that was great. The other thing that it showed me also is that science has another dimension of being borderless, and that is there's always something else, something new to learn, something new to discover. And it is really the thrill of science, I think. It's to have the experience of learning something that nobody else knows about. Even if it's very small, even if it's a tiny little step, it's an incredible thrill to think that you're advancing knowledge, even by un petit pas. And I learned that very, very early on here. So it was really a fantastic experience that I had here at McGill. And I got 2 degrees here. And you know, you may retroactively bill me for the intensive language courses that I was immersed in here at McGill. But as I say, it was a very, very good experience. And I had the opportunity to talk to some of you during the poster session. I think you're a little bit more aware than I was, which is good. And I think, and from what I heard, I can see that people here are having the kind of experience that I had as a student. Science is really, and as I say, is the thrill, is that there's a universe to discover. For me, and I'm sure that it is quite similar to many of you, our universe is the biggest, most exciting puzzle to solve. And to think that you can add a little bit on a little contribution in solving that puzzle, as I said, is really exciting. It may be a very small piece, but every piece adds to the picture that we're seeing of our universe and helps us get a clearer and clearer picture. That in itself is exciting, and it's worth doing just for that, just for getting a really great understanding of the world in which we live. But there are other dimensions as well, because as we all know, many of these pieces that are added are contributing to making our world a better place for a lot of people. And you just have to look at many of the statistics or the stories on how people lived in previous centuries to understand the great contributions of science, technology, but also of all the other fields of research and studies in terms of improving our world. When I think of this great universe to discover, I think of so many areas, and of course we don't have unlimited time, but I often think of the North, because it is here in Canada. And to me, the North is a fantastic frontier for us of both research and innovation. There's so much to discover, so much to learn about the North. But also, I think we're all aware that it is a world where so much innovation will also be possible. And there are great, great, great projects in the North, many people from this university involved in these projects. And they're studying the whole picture, not only the climate change, the what's happening in the glaciology, the biodiversity. They're looking at the impact of these changes on people who live there. They're looking at the impact globally on all of our planet of what's happening in the North. And it is truly an exciting part of our country, and one where we have to invest a lot of our wisdom, smarts, intelligence, creativity to explore and to make sure that we also protect. So it's a fantastic area of research. I also think, of course, of the oceans. since we have three great oceans in Canada. And you may know that there are fantastic programs in oceanography in this country. There are two huge programs on the two coasts of Canada, and one of them in Victoria on the west coast has done a fantastic project of tracking what's happening in our oceans through having instruments at the bottom of the oceans, and so that we can track what's happening and the kinds of new species they're discovering, the kinds of materials they're discovering is just incredibly fascinating, because there's so much that what we realize is, of course, there's so much that we don't know about our oceans. This is all also being available in real time through the net, so that people can watch what is being observed in our oceans. Again, to me, it's a frontier of both discovery and innovation, because I think that there's so much we need to learn about oceans, but again, we're pretty certain that we will have to explore our ocean for some resources that are important to us as a planet, both in the material area, in the food area, in energy, and so there's a whole world to explore of both research and innovation. Now, we heard a lot this summer about the Higgs boson. I don't have to tell you much about it, but it is incredibly exciting that we're probing matter at this level and trying to understand the universe that we live in. And, of course, the whole wide, large universe. And what to me is fascinating is the connection between the very small and the incredibly large. They're all connected into our universe, and that's totally fascinating. We know that there's so little we know about our universe, less than 5%. Isn't that incredible? So there's a whole lot to discover about the universe, and it is fascinating. We don't know yet how, in many of these areas, we don't know yet what we're going to do of these discoveries. That is, we don't know if we can exploit them for betterment of mankind, or people's kind, I should say, or for economic purposes. But we know that it is important for us as human beings to understand more about the universe that we live in. And also what we do know is that the technologies that are being developed to do this research are really contributing to our prosperity. And, of course, the most cited example is the World Wide Web, which was developed as part of the CERN laboratory and the work on the boson. So this is also very exciting. Now, for all these great discoveries, we need some grands explorateurs. And this is another thing that I think I didn't know at all when I came to McGill. You know, I knew McGill was a famous university in Canada, the best-known university in Canada. I had no clue that it was one of the best universities in the world and was known to be so. And there are benefits as a student to be part of such a great university, because you're truly studying with some of the great, great, great explorateurs of science, in my case, and in other disciplines of others, but you're truly among some of these great thinkers when you study with them. And so that is, I think, an incredible benefit, which I came to realize. I told you about meeting Dorothy Hodgkin, Linus Pauling, all these great people in my field. But I think most of the students here have the opportunities to meet these kinds of giants in their own field. And they meet them because when you're in a great university, you can attract people who are also in great grands explorateurs, as I call them, and they work with other people around the world who are doing the same thing they're doing. So I want to introduce you to some of these grands explorateurs, because they're right here on campus. You have the opportunity to bump into them on a daily basis. So look at their picture and see what they're doing. It's extremely exciting. And I have to say, it is tough to choose because there are so many people in these universities that could make the list of Grand Explorateurs. So I use a very simple criterion to choose them. They are people who have recently won some fairly major prizes at NSERC. And so that's the way I chose them. And I had to cut off to not too many years because we'd still be here late tonight if I didn't do that. But this is one of these great explorateurs, Robert Seringer. He won what is in Canada, I think, the greatest prize for these people who early on in their career demonstrate that they are just top league in the world in their field and have are really pushing the frontiers of knowledge in their own field. It's a great, great award because it gives them the tremplin to step up to the next level. And Robert Seringer won this prize just this year. And you can see from the description of his research how important this is. We already talk about how much there is to discover about our universe. And in order to do that, you need the tools to equip you for these discoveries. And mathematics is certainly some of the essential tools that you need, and that's what he's working on. Roussos Dimitrakopoulos is not in science, he's in engineering, but extremely important work, and he won an award at NSERC, which celebrates great collaborations between the researchers in our academic institutions and the industry. You can see here important work for mining companies that he's doing, and that's important for these companies. Again, here, Roderick Guthrie and Miela has the same prize that celebrates great partnerships and very important work in metallurgical materials. Vicky Caspi, she's a wonderful researcher, highly celebrated, so I'm sure you know her name. She won one of our top awards for the transformative discovery, which is called the Polanyi Award, named after the Nobel Prize winner. She's also a Canada Research Chair in Observational Astrophysics, and she won our STACI Award. She's one of those people who will probably win every award we have at NSERC and is doing extraordinarily exciting work on neutron stars. Andrew Hendry, and he won the STACI, I've already described the prize, in evolution biology. And again, you know, you look at these areas of research and you can see, even though you may not understand if you're not in the field exactly what they do, but you can see that this is probably quite important to look at evolution in terms of the influence on the environment by the survivors. Karim Nader, again one of our STACI awardees, who looks at neurobiological processes behind acquiring and storing memories. This is an area that's gaining a lot of attention, particularly as people see the importance of this field in perhaps giving us the ability to erase negative memories. This could be very important for people who have suffered from some traumatic experiences or people who suffer from addictions. So this is a field, if you keep your ears open, you'll see a lot about this in the press. And finally, Brigitte Vachon. She was in the news this summer with the Higgs boson, one of our great scientists who's participating in this incredible experiment that is going on in Switzerland. And Guy Moore, again, and what you can see here is that you have in your midst a lot of people who early on in their career have been recognized as being at the leading edge of their field. Again, here's somebody who looks at those important foundation science foundation that we need to understand our universe. Now, I think I mentioned, and I think it's worth repeating, that a lot of this research is worth doing just for the sake of acquiring new knowledge. And that is certainly a vision that we share at NSERC. But also, if the research can contribute to improving our society, our Canadian industry, it is a good thing as well. And many people are linking the two. They're linking what they're doing in their research, in their discovery research program, to some really big opportunities or challenges in the industry or in our society. This is an example here. We have some programs that we support that are fairly large group of researchers working on really leading-edge, important problems that are of great importance to us, and this is an example, the Seismic Research Network, with the scientific director's name here, Dennis Mitchell. There's a large group around Professor Mitchell and a group that is not only from McGill but also from other universities. And I don't have to tell you, particularly after the event, the tragic event in Japan almost a year and a half ago, that this is incredibly important. You might be surprised also to see that there's, maybe not, because we know the Vancouver area is particularly fragile here on that front in Canada. So this is important for us as well. Green Fiber Network, another one of those great networks, and contributing to important research for new forms of energy, and in particular for renewable form of energy. So they're looking at the wood, the forestry products, wood fibers here for replacing fossil fuel and non-renewable products. A lot of what people do, and I think this is something that is important to remember, is that many of the research programs have applications in different areas. This is a great example here. People in information technology developing important research program with application in the health sector. And this is a program here at McGill. And finally, the Biofuel Network. This is a new project, actually, that has been funded here at McGill, building on a previous very successful project here. It's a very large network. These are large investments that we make at the level of $5 million a year for a period of 5 years. As you can imagine, when you make these kinds of investments, you need to know that you're making good investments. So the due diligence is pretty extensive. When you win one of those, you have every reason to be proud of what you've accomplished. But again, extremely, extremely important area of research, and one where you also see great opportunities for collaboration with other people all around the world. That is another dimension, I think, and I mentioned it before, but we need to remember that the borderless world of science and technology is also increasingly a world where the frontiers are disappearing. The environment in which we live and work as a scientist and engineer is a global environment. We work with colleagues from all over the world, and we forge teams with people from all over the world. The technologies, the communication technologies that are available to us allow us to do that, and it's great. When I was visiting some of the posters, I talked to people who already have a sense of that they're not going to work just within Canada. They're already working with people outside of our country. This is the world that you're entering. The one thing to remember is it's absolutely wonderful, it's exciting, but it is also the world in which you will compete. And that means that you have to work hard. You have to set your ambitions high and work hard. But it is a great world to join, I think. Now, I have to tell you a few things about ANSUC so that you get a sense of who we are and what we do. We're the largest funding agency supporting natural sciences and engineering in Canada, and we get all of our money from the federal government. So we're a federal agency. You may know of a similar agencies that is here in Quebec, and they fund research in Quebec. We fund research and research training across our country, and we have a budget of about $1 billion a year. So as you can imagine, I have a difficult but very interesting job, which is to invest these monies wisely, and we get a lot of help in doing this job from the scientific community, who help us assessing all the proposals we get and where we should invest our money. We invest our money in three priority areas. People, because one of the greatest challenge for our country will be to have the talent we need in this country for all of these great explorations that are there at our doorsteps, but we need smart, hardworking, and creative people to do that. So that's a big challenge for us. Discovery is investments where we put money in those people who have demonstrated excellence, creativity, and we let them do what they think they should do. We put very little constraints on their exploration of their world of research. And finally, innovation, where we invest monies to create those partnerships that will help bring all these discoveries, talented people, together with other partners in society and industry who can make use of these ideas and discoveries. We have major challenges. We have a lot of opportunities in this country, but we also have some major challenges. We're a huge geography with a small population. I mean, that's often how we describe our country. And we already know that we may face real challenge in recruiting the highly qualified and creative workforce that we'll need in the future. So we're looking at you, really, and hoping that you will commit your talent, your effort to science, engineering, in the case of ANSUC here, because we need you. We already know that we will have a shortage of people who have the kind of education, training, talent that you have. So that is important. And the other thing we know is there will be a huge war for talent. This is a borderless world, so mobility is increasing every day. And it's quite likely that people like yourself will spend time in other parts of the world during your career. But we need to make sure that you come back to Canada and you spend most of your time in Canada. It's okay to go elsewhere, but we want you to be here. I often make reference to a famous Montrealer, not a scientist, but a great Montrealer, Yannick Nézet-Séguin. As you know, he is now getting offers everywhere. He's directing, he's a conductor of the Metropolitan Orchestra in Montreal, but he's also conducting in Rotterdam, he's conducting in Philadelphia, you know. And I say, well, that's great, you know, because he's bringing real talent with a Canadian flavor all over the world. But we must make sure that Yannick come back to conduct in Montreal. And it's the same thing, I think, in the way we have to think of these great talented scientists. They will have opportunities to go elsewhere, and it will enrich them, and it will enrich us also if they come back fairly often. We want to make sure they have a good anchor in Canada. We are truly in a knowledge-based economy, and I think that we and a global environment, a global economy. I think of a number of events recently which really makes it absolutely clear that we live within a knowledge-based and global economy. Just think of the financial crisis. You think of climate change, which makes us realize that we are in a global environment. We're all together on the same planet, and I think this is something that we realize every day. And for many years now, Canada has been giving itself not the best track record in innovation. We need to be a bit more innovative, take a bit more risk, create the kinds of companies that are at the leading edge in their areas. So these are real challenges for Canada. And I can tell you, people look at you as those who will help us address these issues and move us forward in the direction that we want to be a great country, a good country for its people and for the world, but a great country that is known for its creativity and innovation. And I mentioned we have three priorities, but really, as you know, it all starts with people. And for us at NSERC, it starts with nurturing, attracting, and retaining people of talent. Increasing the visibility of our country as a great place to be, a great place to study, a great place to do research. Offering training opportunities that will be enriching for our students in particular. And connecting you to people all over the world. These are goals that we have, and I can tell you that they mean a lot to us. And the best way to express that is to show you the kinds of programs we have to bring these goals into reality, and the money we invest also to make these goals a reality. We have a lot of support for students. Sometimes people don't understand that. They think, well, research money goes to who? The professors? Well, actually, 43% of our $1 billion budget goes to students. That's where it goes, either in the form of direct scholarships, fellowship, or through stipends that their professors give them to do research. I make a case to government. You know, one of the goal of government because of the financial crisis is to stimulate the economy. So I tell them, because I'm a scientist, I rarely say that something will happen, say, 100% of the time. I usually leave myself a margin of error, but as I can tell you, 99.9% sure that a dollar put at the beginning of the month in the pocket of a student will make its way back in the economy before the end of the month and will stimulate economies in the economy of communities all over our country. This is a way of stimulating economy with an investment in our future. And that is important. You do have a great contribution to the economy of Montreal. We hope that we can help you contribute to dynamic economy of Montreal. So this is, I think, a way of showing that we mean what we say here. And in fact, when we compare ourselves with other agencies, I think we stand at the top in terms of the percentage of our budget that is allocated for student support. And we support students all across the programs. Again, this is quite unusual. Very few agencies like ours have programs at the undergraduate level. I know many of you benefited from being able to spend your summer in a research lab, and we have a program that supports that, in particular undergraduate student research awards. And I was really thrilled to hear that here at McGill, you've copied, or maybe we copied you. I don't know which way it went. It doesn't matter, but we're both aligned there in realizing the importance of giving you a chance to see what research looks like. And you can do that either within the university or in an industrial partner. So these are opportunities for undergraduate students. A whole suite of programs when you get to graduate work. I won't describe them all, but there are quite a lot of programs, some that allows you, like the Michael Smith, to go for, say, 3-4 months outside of Canada. Go join somebody's lab, usually a partner of your supervisor, and spend some time there to learn something that that can add to your experience here. One that is also quite famous is the Vanier, because it is extremely prestigious and it comes with a great stipend. I don't know if I can mention it. If it's a $50,000 stipend, no tax. So this is a pretty good stipend. So it's a very prestigious program. And then programs at the doctoral levels as well. Now, one thing that I don't know if it is in the other slide here, maybe I didn't put it in, but we also have a really neat program. Oh, it's in the other, it's not on the slide. Neat program for group training of students. This is a program where a group of professors who are working together as part of a team will create an environment for their students to be part of a bigger team. And the team can be multidisciplinary. It can involve people from other countries. It can involve people from other sectors. So it really is a program where you fit this learning environment to the need of the research theme, and it gives really a fantastic training program for students. Now, this is all, I think, giving you a picture on the importance that we see in this country of people with your talent, with your education. I'm sure, though, that you all know people who have just graduated and they say, I'm not too sure what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'll find a good job. Maybe I'll start. I'm not so sure. And I often think about this, that you have, in a way, an extraordinary opportunity, but also a bit of a at times unsettling environment to get into, because our world has changed in some ways in the speed of advances in both science and technology. And so the world of today is unlikely to be the world that we'll see in 10 years from now, even in 5 years from now. And so for you, the opportunity, but also the challenge, is that you're going to be the ones who will build that new world. That's part of your future. In my generation, so that's a long time ago, it wasn't moving quite as fast. So when we looked at the jobs out there, we said, okay, these are the jobs that I will be into probably for most of my careers. While in your generation, there are all sorts of jobs that will be there, and we don't even know them yet. We don't even know they exist yet. And I like words, so I start thinking about the words that are new in my vocabulary. I had no clue what an apps was 5 years ago. What is an apps? You think about a cell, you know. Well, most people, if you tell them a cell, they'll think of a cell phone, something like that. Well, at one point in history, a cell was a jail cell, or it might be a biological entity. But the cloud, you know. Well, I saw some great clouds today in one of the research posters, but you talk about, in some area or some environment, you talk about the cloud, they automatically think about computing and the cloud, you know, that's what it means to. So look at these words, they're wonderful because they show us that a lot of progress has been made, even from, say, 5, 10 years ago, phrases or words that were not even part of our vocabulary are now common words and phrases in our vocabulary. Twitter, well, I don't know, but it meant something completely different to me. And tablet, you know, I think, well, this is far from Moses coming down the hill. Eh? So it is, I think, in our language, we see in a very clear way how fast science, technology are moving, and what great opportunities this will create for us. And this is all for you to do. It's a big challenge, but it is exciting, I think. And let's go back to the big man, because it does make reference to that. He says, logic will get you from A to B. Imagination will take you everywhere. And that certainly has been my experience in this world. Of course, I have the privilege of being able to see what he means here on a daily basis, being among some of the great scientists and engineers, not only of Canada, but of the world. But it is absolutely true. Imagination will get you everywhere and in places that we right now don't even know about. So it is extremely exciting. I will end, when I go abroad, I always bring the slides because I tell people this is a great summer scene in Canada. You know, they all have this idea that it's extremely cold in Canada. They don't realize we had a very wonderful summer, much better than in many parts of the world, but it is truly a summer scene in Canada, the high Arctic. You see in the middle the Amundsen, which is the Canadian icebreaker who is a research lab, great facilities for Canada. And I must say that I was thrilled. Maybe, you know, I think I'm a nerd, but that's another story, because I was absolutely thrilled to see that on our new $50 bill. The picture at the back is the Amundsen. I thought that is great to put a research vessel on our Canadian money. That's wonderful. So, merci beaucoup.
Thank you, Suzanne. Great job. We have time for a few questions, and I think we have our lovely assistants to help people with microphones.
Okay.
Hello. Thank you for your presentation and your work. Is this microphone still on? I was just wondering, you talked about Canada's need for innovation and technologies which directly impact Canadians. So how does NSERC balance that with the need to do basic research and discover more about the universe?
Yes. Yes, so we have about 70% of our budget that is bottom-up with no targets at all. People can choose their areas of inquiries and be as creative as they can. The rest, the 30% of our budget, is in the innovation part, and it has some target areas. The target areas are fairly broad, environment, and energy, natural resource, and so on. What we see, and it is interesting for us from the perspective we can have by looking at all the projects and the people we support and looking at the data also, is that the world where you could divide neatly basic research and applied research doesn't quite exist anymore. What we see is inquiry-driven research, and I would put in that a lot of work, say, on particle physics, cosmology, where you're really driven by advancing knowledge for the sake of advancing knowledge right now. And in contrast, the purpose-driven research, where there might be a big challenge, climate change being one. So there's a purpose to the research. But what you need to see, and we see that every day, is that when people are doing purpose-driven research, whether it is in engineering or in the natural sciences, they have to use, they have to be involved in pretty much the full spectrum of research activities, from basic research to applied research. So in the innovation part, there's in fact a lot of basic research that gets done. Yesterday I was at an event where we were celebrating some of our industrial research shares. And there's a great example in this program of people who do exactly that. Well, let me tell you about an example here at McGill, and then I'll tell you about another example in Alberta. There's an industrial research chair here in high-precision, near-term climate prediction, weather prediction. And it is supported by Hydro-Québec. So the goal of this chair is to be able to predict with very high resolution what the weather pattern will be in the next 24 hours. And you have seen that here. You might have a pretty nice day downtown Montreal and a huge rainstorm in Laval. And if you're in the hydroelectric business, knowing that is extremely important if you know it 24 hours ahead of time, because you can then make sure that it doesn't create problem. You can mitigate the problem. That's a great example. Now, is this person doing purpose-driven research? Absolutely. Is it basic research? Absolutely. So this is one example. Another one, which I mentioned from last night, we have incredible resources in the oil sands in this country, but we all agree, and in the industry agree, that we need to exploit that in a more environmentally friendly way. So we support an industrial chair to find non-aqueous way of extracting the bitumen. This is basic chemistry, absolutely. But it is basic chemistry being done for a purpose. So this is an important distinction, and I think it talks to knowledge-based economies, where we now understand that the use of knowledge is extremely important for many of our industrial activities. And in particular, and I think to me it is inspiring, because it's not just about making money, it is about sustainability. It is about making sure that our planet is sustainable. And you see that in many, many industries where the R&D is done for a sustainability purpose.
Thank you.
I think we only have time for one more question, which is mine. It's a cheap joke. I'm sorry. I use it all the time when I'm doing this sort of thing. So, Suzanne, you mentioned that Canada, you're quite careful about, but you mentioned that Canada is lags behind in the innovation agenda, and I'm sure you would argue, certainly I would, that in terms of, you know, other areas, in terms of people and the quality of the scientists, quality of our young people, of course, we're as good as anybody.
Yeah.
What do you think what's up with that?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are all reports in Ottawa. When you live in Ottawa, you're surrounded by reports. There was a great report last week by the Council of Canadian Academies. And in terms of the reputation of Canada, of its scientific excellence, we rank fourth. That is really amazing. We truly punch above our weight in terms of research and basic research. Innovation is where we lag behind. And again, the Council of Canadian Academies did some work on that a few years back. And the conclusion, and I'll describe them in a fairly simple way here, but the conclusion was that the reasons why our Canadian firms are not as innovative as we'd like them to be is because they don't need to. They're making money. And so the drive to be innovative is not there. And they compare the profit level of Canadian companies with American companies, and they were Canadian companies perform just as well. So, and the other thing they said, and that was very important, is we tend to talk about the average. So the average Canadian company is not as innovative as it should be. Well, that's true on the average, but you have a full spectrum there. You have some companies that are highly innovative, some that are middle ground, and some that are not at all. And highly innovative. If I think of Montreal, for example, I know of some of the things that are happening right now in the aerospace industry. And they're ramping up their R&D and being very innovative. So, because they need to. This is a very competitive sector, and new economies are coming out as competitors, certainly Brazil for a long time, but now China. So they better sharpen their skates, as we say in Canada, because they have competition to face here. Others, and another, I shouldn't maybe, but we all know that the forestry industry in Canada for a long time did not see the need to invest in R&D. And now they lost their competitiveness and they have to ramp it up. So, and that's what the report said, is that those who are not investing in R&D and are not very innovative are not stupid. It's because they don't see the need. And la nécessité, necessity is the mother of it. Yeah, and I think many people, I remember actually a colleague of mine who has been a very, very successful contributor to making Israel the innovation country. As you know, Israel describes itself in that way. And she was asked that question. She's advising us in Canada in terms of our innovation agenda. And she says, well, there's a huge difference between Israel and Canada. We have no resources. We hardly have any water. We are crammed into a small space, and we're surrounded by enemies. So we have no choice. We have to be innovative. But you in Canada have it easy. Yeah. And you might not feel the urge to be innovative because you enjoy very high quality of life. And so the fire in the belly hasn't been lit up yet. But I'm hoping, I'm counting on you, really, because, yes, we've enjoyed a very, very high quality of life in Canada, and we have enormous advantage in our resources and so on and so forth. But we need to exploit those resources in a more environmentally friendly way, sustainable way. And I'll mention, of course, we all know about many of these resources, but just think about water. We are so fortunate to have all the fresh water that we have in this country. But the world will need Canada, and we need to preserve that reserve far more than we do now. We waste so much water because it's there, and we don't think of it as a precious resource. But increasingly, it will be that, and people will be counting on Canada for that precious resource. So I think it's important that, and I see that actually in people of your generation, that you get that, and that fire in the belly is growing. So.
Thank you, Suzanne. We've got a... We have a parting gift.
Merci beaucoup.
I have no idea what it is, but I'm sure it's very wonderful. I've learned something as an academic administrator, is that people give talks, and often great talks like Suzanne gave, but they also project something of themselves in their talk. And I think it's fascinating if you watch for that for a second. And for me, what she projected was a great deal of warmth and a great deal of generosity for your alma mater. I'd like to thank you again, invite all of you. Since we're in Montreal, we can go out and have a reception with wine and cheese.
That's right,
Margaret,
what we can do.
Yeah, I know.